This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, this is cool. Cowboys' new DC, Dan Quinn, sat down with the Pro Football Focus nerds, Steve Palazzolo and Sam Monson, and described sort of his philosophy on coaching and some of specifically the parts that he is at this point in his career and how things have evolved. I'm a Dan Quinn believer. I think it's a good hire. To do what he did with the Seattle defense is great. But then on top of that, he had staying power in Atlanta. And through adversity, you know, things did not really break down to where the players in the locker room lost faith in him or the relationship with the front office broke down. This is a guy that I think is professional. He knows how to manage his job, manage the players, manage up to the front office. And I think if you have a 5-6 year run through such adversity that and expectations the Atlanta Falcons franchise face, that is also a tremendously good sign about your ability to remain professional and on task and not get distracted by any personal stuff or weighed down by expectations and disappointment. So, but where is he in his career and what's he bringing to the table matters a lot more in all that stuff, because we got a very mediocre defense, average at best the entire decade, that really needs to take the next step to being dang good if this team's going to get back to where it wants to be. So we'll start with cut three. Cut three here from Dan Quinn and the G-Bag Nation. Do you have a scheme? Are you implementing your scheme, or do you have to ease into it, build around your players? How do you balance those two things? Here's Dan Quinn.
There's a little bit of both, and certainly you want, like when you're going into a new place, you want to find, you know, what some of the strengths are, you know, in terms of the current thing. You want to, you know, dig back. And for me, I had some time, unfortunately, to look at a long, big history of things that that I also liked, what needed to change, what would be some things that I don't know, modernize is the word, or tweak, you know, to adjust so the system can, you know, can have some, you know, different looks to it. And so it'll certainly be part of that system. And then there's some other coaches here and some things that I want to implement. So let's find out the best way. So number one, like creating the identity where guys can play fast. I think every really good defense, you know, that has a part of, it's an aggressive front and they play that way. And that's, to me, is where it starts. So I'm looking forward to digging in on all those topics. But at the end of the day, how much you play of one thing or another, that'll depend a little bit on the players.
With, I love to hear that. You know, I remember in Seattle when they were at the top of their game, a lot of the talk was, look at what Pete Carroll and the Seahawks defense have done, putting players in position to succeed and taking guys that might not fit their prototype for what they had in mind, but finding different things they can do that have just as big of an impact. So I don't know how much Dan Quinn was involved in that, how much is the genius of a guy like Belichick, you know, compared to his support staff. And the same goes for Carroll and Quinn, but a lot of the credit did go to Quinn for those kind of things, and that's why he got the job in Atlanta. But that's going to be key right there, especially coming off the failures under Mike Nolan.
I love that he used the word modernize, although he was careful to pretend like it wasn't a dig at anybody, where he's like, well, I don't know if I want to say this, but, you know, modernize, like, you know, there are trends in the NFL and there are things that you've got to be gearing up to stop, and there are ways to do it. And I love that so many coaches realize that, because the more I've learned about football, the more I've been disappointed in the number of people who get jobs running offenses or defenses with what they don't do, with what we can understand about the game. And it's like, holy cow, how does that still guy still have a job? I love that he used the word modernize. And I love what I read from Richard Sherman. I think it was like last month. For some reason, he was talking about Dan Quinn. Because I was worried that you're going to try to bring that straight up cover three. Your corners are kind of bailing and playing a deep third. You got one deep safety. You got one down safety. Because typically that defense is kind of saying, I dare you to throw it. Like, I'm going to take away the run. I dare you to throw it. And I think modern football is more two safeties deep and saying, I dare you to try to win this game 4 yards at a time. I dare you. So the Richard Sherman thing that I was reading, I thought was great. I forget what game he was talking about. But he's like, we go in for half and we're losing. And Dan walks in and he's like, look, I know this is what we do. They're beating it. He's like, so I know this isn't necessarily what you do. Get ready. We're playing man the whole second half. Because that's what this game calls for. And so, like, a guy like Richard Sherman, who's more comfortable playing, like, a deep third, I'm going to bail, I'm going to find the ball, I'm going to pick it off. It's like, well, we're in a bad spot here. You got him, you got him, you got him, we have to play man. And they won that game. They gave up, like, 3 points in the second half, and they won that game. Sweet. And that's all I want from my coaches, is what is this particular moment asking me to do? And do it. Not here's what we do, and if you beat me, so be it. But, oh, it looks like you might beat me because of this. I have to do this.
I love that, Brian. I know we need to hear from you, but I love that because I'm really tuned into coaches being able to talk the good game but not be able to execute it. They all know when they get together in their coaching circles and their lectures the kind of things that they're supposed to say, and I'm flexible to the player. But it's difficult to execute that. So when you can give me examples of a guy that's bringing in and it's not just talk, I think that boosts my confidence in the man even more.
Yeah, I think the thing with Dan and talking to my guys at Atlanta, they were very complimentary towards him as far as the teaching aspect. They were excited about that he was going to be able to potentially have a couple guys with him. He's going to need some help on the back end. That's where Joe Witt's going to take a lot of the pressure off him, because Dan is really good with the front, but everything has been very, very positive about him as a teacher, how he's able to communicate with the players, how they respond to him. All that was really, really, really positive for me. I think the thing that I want to, and I hope, sometimes we get coaches that when they get let go, they talk about, hey, I have to go back and reevaluate what I did and this and the other. We heard that from Mike McCarthy. And whether you want to believe it or not, there seems to be the jury's out on that. I really want to believe that Dan Quinn sat down and after he got let go and said, listen, this is, if I'm going to do this, it's probably going to be as a coordinator. I'm probably going to have to do it this way. And I think that gave him some opportunity to sit back, to reflect, and then to hopefully be a better defensive coordinator and a better coach because of it. Because everything I heard about him is outstanding from the teaching aspect.
Okay, well, since you mentioned that, Lucius, let's jump down to cut 9. Okay, this is Dan Quinn, Cowboys' new DC with the Pro Football Focus NFL podcast. Because he talked about that subject, Brian, when head coaches go back to being coordinators, what have you learned from being a head coach that will make you a better DC going forward? Here's Dan Quinn.
I don't know if we have enough time to go through it, honestly. Like, it was, like I said, I got let go. So I wanted to make sure I was going to apply the lessons, because otherwise – some of the mistakes that you made, you want to say, okay, how is this going to help on the next spot? And so for me, I definitely had that to say. Sometimes as a head coach, you can feel like you want to take on too much. Here you can help, here you can help, here. And really, at the end, make sure you do the things much like a player does. Here's the things I know I can help impact the team the most. And so that's kind of the vision I have coming here to Dallas, to make sure that I can do those things to, help winning. And that's really what it's all about. So anything that takes you away from that, bring it back to the middle to make sure that's the main emphasis. So you get pulled in a number of ways. I think some of the head coaches that have done it the best, who have done the play calling in that spot, I've got a lot of respect for those guys.
Right.
So simplifying the job description, eliminating distractions. As a head coach, you got to be even more responsible for that. That's what I took away from that. And as throughout the process of being the head coach, he perhaps learned how to manage his focus on what's important more than before he had become a head coach. But what I am more interested in there is a real, a genuine and conscientious acceptance that things didn't go well. And I need to learn from those if I'm going to be a better version of myself, not sort of a timeless belief in football principles that you can apply year in and year out. And at least for now, I'm optimistic that Dan Quinn's going to bring that to the table. We'll see once the bullets start flying. You know, it's real difficult in any life situation once you start facing adversity to really go to the principles of what you know is right compared to what your life experience has conditioned you to react with. And, you know, it's by trial and error. Oh, man, I messed up. I reacted that way again. I went back to what was comfortable. And this is Mike McCarthy's challenge as well, right? Resisting the desire under pressure to go back to what's comfortable. Cut five here, Dan Quinn. Do you still use Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, and Earl Thomas as the prototypes of what you are looking for?
Yeah, I think so. Knowing they have, what you're trying to do is find some of the traits that a player has that's similar to that. You may not, you know, find every 230-pound safety that can hit like a truck, but there are going to be some that have really good, you know, physicality qualities to them. You may not find, you know, a corner who's got, you know, 33s and has, you know, crazy good ball skills, you know, like Sherm. But what you can find is like how important ball skills are for corners, you know, the ability to stop and plant. And that's like one of the things that made Richard so great. Recall, like how smart he is. I can clearly remember, like, we were playing Carolina in the first year I was there, and the team had played Carolina when I wasn't there the year before. And he just, you know, leaned over and said, "Hey, against this formation, this route is coming." And I went back, you know, to the previous season to look. Sure enough, he was right. And they had played him like middle of the year. So it wasn't like the last game and he remembered it, you know, to start the season. But like a player who has that kind of recall, those are traits of like smart and recall, like that are hard to, you know, they don't necessarily show up on tape or in a measurable, but they have unique stuff to them.
That's incredible.
Yeah, Richard Sherman, I think his intelligence is what really helped separate him, his intensity. You know, obviously the ball skills were great and all that, but one of the interesting things Sherman and Diggs have in common is they were both college wide receivers. You know, so I don't know. We saw some of the ball skills with Diggs this year, but not in the interception department. There was a notable drop, but it was more of the hammering the ball out once the receiver had caught it. But I hope there's potential there in Diggs to unleash some of those wide receiver skills.
Go up there and that's become a really common thing. I honestly don't remember, Brian, when Richard Sherman was coming out, was that a really common thing that you would show up to college as a receiver and 2 or 3 years later, you'd be talking about him as an NFL corner? Because it's super common now.
Oh, no.
If you're 6'2", 190 pounds, and you're athletic, and you're not going to make the depth chart at wide receiver, or you're not going to make an impact, or you're not going to be a pro, they'll switch you. They'll be like, "Hey, welcome. You're switching." And 2 years later, if you've played okay, you're getting drafted as a corner.
Yeah. Well, look at the Cowboys' possibility with Farley from Virginia Tech. You know, if everybody's mentioning him as a possibility as a corner this year for the Cowboys, if they could get him to 10, that's a guy that came to Virginia Tech as a wide receiver and converted to be a corner. And usually it's one of those funny things that back in the day, if you went from wide receiver to corner, it was you couldn't catch. You know, your hands weren't good enough.
Right.
But now it's, you know, you have to, like Coach was mentioning, you have to have the ball skills. You know, that's important. You can't allow offenses to continue drives if you can't catch the ball if thrown to you. So I love hearing Richard Sherman's stories. I think, you know, he's one of those guys that when you start talking about corner play and how you want your corners to play, there could be a physical side to you, but there also has to be a mental side, the way he's able to stay in route, the way he's able to redirect. I mean, he puts on a clinic the way he plays and is doing it very speed deficient throughout his career, so you have to be smart to play that way.
Okay, I know we're a little late, and I apologize to management if they're listening directly to both Gavin Spittle and Tim Collins. You make it three for three, Brian Purdy as well. I'm a minute late already, but I really want to get this cut in. So cut seven, how has the scheme evolved since those Legion of Boom days 6-7 years back, Dan Quinn?
Well, a lot has changed. I think early on there was, you know, when you play a scheme quite a bit, you know, there'll be, you know, one or two things that can, you know, give it some trouble. finding where, you know, maybe the weakness of a certain coverage is, and then here comes another one, and here comes another one. And so pretty soon there's a number of things that can, you know, get you into trouble if you're not careful. So the tweaks that had to happen, you know, like oftentimes people say, well, that's, you know, the version of three and the way you teach it in training camp is good. And then you get into the season and game planning, and that's when the smallest tweaks would come about to defend certain routes or certain people or formations that maybe aren't in the playbook. You know, they don't go in on day one, but they're the tweaks that go. So I think it evolves in that space. And then I think the second piece is having more variations off of that, you know, maybe some things that look like cover three and then play as something different. And we've had more success or creating a big play when you can show the presentation of one thing and then play, you know, something different. So oftentimes in the old days, if the corners were opposite, you knew it was zone. So how do you play some zone where the corners come over? And I think things like that, that helps.
Right.
All right. Good to say. Good to see it, you know, at least from Dan's perspective, it has been evolving considerably. And we'll pick up here with, you know, coverage after training, after the draft with the mini camp and training camp. And we're going to check in on him, see if it's accurate or if he's just saying what needs to be said to get the gig. We've been down that path before.
Mm-hmm.
Things you can gamble on. Could you still be confident betting on Patty and the Chiefs? That is next in the nation. Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 through the Fan. We have things you can gamble on, NFL style. How confident would you be in laying cash right now on Patrick Mahomes with the injury? Segment is brought to you by Soda, and it's brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident and it's not your fault, call the Frankels 214-333-3333 or go online to truckwreck.com. Yeah, odds to win the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 55 coming up here in, 2 weeks? Green Bay Packers and Kansas City Chiefs co-favorites right now at 11-5. Does Vegas have inside information that everything's going to be fine with old Patty? Because laying action like that to get past Buffalo, I don't think you can account for the shift in numbers. They have to believe there's a very good chance Mahomes plays.
Oh, yeah. They're like me. They're just like, oh, it's the NFL. They're not going to have the quarterback not play in the AFC title game. He's going to play. Plus, I think the momentum is also starting to go that way with the news of the day where he's starting to clear some things and yada, yada, yada. Yeah, he's going to play. He's playing.
And if he's compromised with a little bit of a concussion, is that something
What does that mean? A little bit of a concussion.
Exactly what you've been talking about.
Or he's been choked out. Lost blood flow and all that.
How did he get choked out, though? Okay, that's the Jay Glazer angle, that his injury is more consistent with being choked out. But he didn't take a hit to the head or have anything around his neck.
No, it was...
Did he get hit in a nerve? Some type of nerve?
He ended up... He had... It was the...
Cervical nerve?
It was Mac Wilson, right? Yeah. He ended up basically with his left arm in a, like, not around the front where you would choke him out, but like a side choke out. That's how he ended up down. It was like a sideways choke hold.
So was he so strong he choked him out in like a second and a half?
Cut off air, cut off
momentum,
blood flow,
momentum on the tackle, yeah.
I mean, it's easier to sell me on that than that he had a concussion. He didn't hit his head.
Sure.
On anything.
Yeah.
And I know you can get a concussion from a sudden movement, from lots of things.
Sudden stopping, yeah.
But I don't...
A whiplash concussion.
I didn't see any of that when he got hit.
He did sure look woozy, but I would think if any quarterback had been hit in the head and got up like that and had a genuine concussion, I would bet against him playing the next game. That looks like a 2 to 3 week type of concussion when you're wobbly and stuff and you're having a difficult time. But heck, if they're saying he's starting to clear protocol on a Tuesday, that absolutely by Friday, by Saturday or Sunday, I would anticipate he is going to play. By the way, the Bills are the next favorite at 3-1. Assuming Mahomes is full strength, how impressive is Buffalo to you guys at this point? Could you see the Bills beating the full strength Chiefs in Kansas City?
Oh, I could see it. The Chiefs, the second half of the year, haven't been dominant, but it just feels like they do whatever they have to do to win a game, and sometimes it means their offense isn't playing well for a while, and they'll come alive when they need to. To me, I have no doubt that the Chiefs are going to win the game, but Buffalo is, they're capable of beating them. That's a good team. That's a good team with a really good young quarterback. They can play defense. Buffalo can win the game. I don't believe they will, but they can.
Yeah, I had a Cleveland Brown victory over Kansas City, so I'm probably not the best to speak of that. But I do think that Kansas City, they do have their faults, but they do find ways to win games. And, you know, there's teams throughout history that win a lot of close games. I mean, we always talk about the Seattle Seahawks. Now, how many close games do they win? You know, those 3-4 point games, and they seem to pull it off every time that it gets close. So Kansas City might be the team to be the back-to-back champs. By the way, they're winning these tight games.
But there isn't really a team with a bad chance or no chance. Even the Buccaneers are sitting there at 15-4. I wonder, going up into Green Bay, they have the better defense. They have a good offense.
Green Bay's defense is playing better.
They're playing better than they did during the year.
Yeah, that's the trick right now. And hey, let's, you know, go back and maybe into the week I'll watch the Tampa Green Bay game, give you a little bit of an idea of how they did it, but they smashed Green Bay. They got after Aaron Rodgers in that game in Tampa, you know, so that's got to give them a little hope. But Ben, I'll tell you, the Packers overall defensively, a lot of credit to their offense and how they're playing, you know, with the protection and stuff like that. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, he has all day to throw the ball against the Rams. I mean, it was impressive how they played, but it's the Packers defense, I think, that's holding them in these last few weeks as far as the way they've played.
All righty. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 Through the Fan, and we look forward to discussing more at length with you all of the storylines of conference championship weekend, a game that the Saints will not be in. But I think it's appropriate to salute Saints receiver Michael Thomas. He did have an up-and-down season, but I think for Saints fans, you really appreciate the effort that he put himself to try his best to play through what was a very significant injury, likely to have surgeries on a torn deltoid and other injured ligaments in his ankle that plagued him all season. A source telling ESPN's Adam Schefter today suffered a high ankle injury in the final minutes of week one, missed a total of 9 games in the regular season, but the source said he knew it was likely going to be Drew Brees' last season and didn't want to miss out on trying to win a Super Bowl with him. Thomas often wouldn't practice all week, yet would still play in games at much less than 100% and with pain medication. You know, you're talking about getting on that Toradol shot, which is an incredible anti-inflammatory and pain blocker, and maybe opioid-based painkillers that you're taking pills throughout the week or during the game as well. That is a tremendous sacrifice to sign up for a possible addiction to a very, very addictive substance. And long-term consequences of getting on that Toradol shot. The coaches told him that even as injured as he was, they were much better off with him than without him. So he wanted a sacrifice, and you know, I think that's you know, a cool story. 510 career receptions are the most by a player in the first 5 seasons of his NFL career. He's just outstanding. Finished the regular season with 40 catches for 438 yards and no touchdowns in 7 games, but wanted to sacrifice. He missed weeks 2 through 8 after first suffering the injury, being disciplined for 1 game of practice for an altercation that included him punching a teammate. Then he suffered a hamstring injury during his recovery to go along with the deltoid. It's been a rough year for Michael Thomas and the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much or how many things were hurting on him. I just noticed during that game, I was like, holy cow, like they can't get him the ball at all. Went 0-for in the game. They threw it to him 4 times, but he was well covered. I was just like, man, I'm not used to this. Michael Thomas is not open, but that's the way that thing played out.
All righty, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 Through the Fan. We have Jeff's unnamed segment of the day coming up at 6 o'clock. We're going to be talking Mavs with you here coming up at 5:40 on your home of the Cowboys. Mac Engel wrote about the cable TV situation, and I think it's an important story that you can, need to totally digest the fact that it's not changing. Engel writing today, there is no imminent resolution on this deal with Fox Sports Southwest and Sinclair. They included parts of Sinclair's statement, who owns the rights to the Fox Sports Southwest. They say, at no time have we demanded exorbitant fees for these channels. Instead, we've consistently offered both pay TV providers extremely fair deals in line with what hundreds of other TV services have agreed to and continue to agree to. They say, however, despite high-profile ad campaigns and website claims touting their live sports content, we have yet to see the same commitment from either provider to put consumers first. Unfortunately, at this point, we have no choice but to conclude that neither Disney, which owns Hulu, or Google, which owns YouTube, is willing to engage in good faith discussions or return the RSNs to their platforms. So their issue is they're trying to get Hulu and YouTube to pay the same amount as other companies have paid for these regional sports properties, as you know, big cable has for their channels. And the issue with that is streaming costs less. So they're asking the Hulus and the YouTube TVs, hey, pay what the big cable companies are for these products. And the streaming services are saying, we can't. Our entire business model is based off the idea that we charge less, about 60% less than Spectrum or whatever the cable service is. Those guys are coming in at $150 to $200 bucks. We're thinking $60 to $80 bucks to get all of this. And Sinclair's saying, yeah, that's not our problem. You know, you were trying to get under cable TV skin and undercut them by taking advantage of deals for a lesser money for these cable properties. And for a while, it was okay. But then the big cable company said, hey, you can't charge us one price and then charge these streaming services another price for this product. It's not fair to us. You're not being a good partner. So now these companies have decided that your streaming services need to pay the same amount. And I don't see any solution. You know, as the Mavs consumer, the big takeaway is what Engel wrote in there. There is no imminent resolution for this problem. So take advantages of the products that are available, and you must adjust because it ain't coming back.
Is that enough to derail the streaming services? I just wonder, like, what percentage of people who cut the cord are also big time local sports fans? Because, I mean, that's a deal breaker for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
I literally got you to save money, but be able to see my teams. That's what you're for. And now I've lost part of that. I wonder how big of a deal that's going to be, because somebody has to be the loser here, whether it's Sinclair eventually folding and being like, all right, you can have it for whatever price you're willing to pay, or whether it's the streaming services either paying up or getting buried. I don't know what percentage of people that is.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what percentage it is either, but I do think this is a huge deal. Streaming can't get the sports for cheaper, it's dead. Streaming is dead. It's an inferior product. I have to wait forever for the channel to change. I have to go looking for stuff. No, it's bad. You know, you can't just hit the three numbers. Like, I know on the old cable service, it was 735 ESPN. Boom. You can't do that on streaming.
Right.
You're cruising around looking. So if it's not significantly cheaper, I think streaming is in the process of losing. You know, as they undercut cable to try to build up their subscribers and then hit big. That's what Amazon did with all this free shipping. We're going to undercut every shop in America until you're dependent upon us. Then we'll raise the prices. Well, streaming hasn't been able to make themselves a good enough product, and they have not been able to secure the best channels in order to make that happen. I don't know how they continue to operate.
How's the quality of your guys' streaming stuff? I mean,
I get an occasional buffer, but I think it's good.
But I mean, it's
worth. I don't have any big problems.
It's worth, but it's not worth it not to have the sports, though, right? I mean, it's
heck no, no. Yeah. If I can't have the sports, you're done.
Yeah,
yeah.
See, because like you would pay just for the sports, right? I mean, is there other channels?
That's all I would want. Yeah, okay. If I could, I would just. And Mark Cuban knows the answer to this. He's talking to the NBA and his ownership partners about, guys, we need to have our own product that NBA fans can just buy. And boom, here you go. You get all of the games in the NBA, like an NBA League Pass. Like HBO did their own separate thing, so you don't have to buy the entire cable thing.
Right.
That's what the NBA has to do, because live sports are one of the only reasons that cable TV and streaming cable is profitable. Because everything else literally is on demand. And live sports is the only thing that can create FOMO, the fear of missing out. And that's how the streamers and the cable companies are continuing to make big money. But I think for pro sports now, it makes less and less sense as your fans' ability to access your content is being lost in this battle to remain profitable. I think it's time for sports to extricate themselves and protect their fan base a little bit more. Okay, coming up next here in the G-Bag Nation on 105 Through the Fan, we go around the NBA, why Luka is not happy with his triple-double and more. That's coming up next in the Nation. Welcome back, Nation. Yeah, it's time to go around the NBA. How much do Mavs expectations come down following their three-game long weekend losing streak? Friday, Sunday, Monday, they got it, three in a row. Milwaukee, Chicago, and Toronto, they're now under 500 at 6-7. Let's go around the NBA. We will get to your best text messages on that here coming up in a few. I do want to talk some Luka and why Luka was not happy with his triple-double performance. But I think I thought it over the weekend, over the break. Cutting the cord went viral. It was the thing that you had to try out. It was sweeping the country, and we did have some fear of missing out on it. Oh, we're saving all this money. But the longer we go, the more we experience it. It's like, hold on, this isn't actually any better. And I'm dealing with some downsides. 817, I cut the cord in 16, had Hulu, YouTube, AT&T Now, and PS View, and went back to cable in 2018 because I need to watch my Mavs. And when you do the math, cable is by far the better choice in most instances. Those numbers just didn't work for my household. Yeah, if you include the cable or the cable internet, the Wi-Fi, on top of the streaming cost, you're approaching the full bill anyway. And then 254 comes in saying, does Gavin have any stats to back up what he's saying? Disney and YouTube TV are growing exponentially every day. Majority of consumers can get by with watching big games on national broadcast and watch the online feeds for free. Do your research.
Oh, get him. Get him.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, hey, I would love to know where you can go to reliably get these free online feeds. I'm up for it. But whenever I try that, it's getting interrupted, it's getting shut off. And as a big-time hardcore sports fan, I don't want to miss a single play. Especially not a game. And if something's unreliable and I got to pirate it and search around and I got pop-ups happening left and right, that's out 100%. I'd rather pay a lot of money every month to know all of my games are going to be on than zero money every month with my fingers crossed. And, oh, missed a couple of games. That doesn't fly for sports radio listeners. The calendar of your schedule dictates your social life, okay? That's how we roll. So I don't know. Maybe you have more reliable links, or maybe you're okay with missing more games as long as it's not a Cowboys game. But NFLs, Stars fans, Rangers fans, it's all 82 or all 162. Anyway, we got to go around the NBA here. We need to talk some Luka. We have the good, the bad, and the ugly of his triple-double performance here. As he did pass Michael Jordan all time for most triple-doubles. He's got 29 of them now.
Okay, all right. That's pretty quick.
He finished Sunday's game with 36, 16, and 15.
And he hated it.
Had 30 in the first half.
And he hated it.
Yes. He says, I played terrible. That's on me. That game I was being selfish a little bit because I had 30 in the first half. That wasn't me in the second. I've got to do way better in the second. That's just on me. In just his third season in the NBA, he's moved into 15th on the all-time triple-double list, but still some way from the top. Oscar Robertson currently holds the current record with 181, and Russell Westbrook is on his heels with 150 of those. Yeah, and I just think that's outstanding. You know, that's that Bradley Beal stuff that we heard about. Was that last week where he dropped like 60? He was like, I don't 60, care, it doesn't yeah. count. You know, it's a losing effort. And I think the great players in the game now know, listen, more than ever, the primary ball handler and the best scorer gets the ball. So we're going to score more. We're going to have more triple-doubles. It doesn't actually mean as much as what the history of these things says it means. So as we're scoring more and putting up more triple-doubles, the statistical production, I think, means less and less and less. And it's awesome that, you know, you have a superstar that understands that at a very young age.
They had no choice on Sunday. I mean, I give him credit for evaluating where his team was, because he was hitting shots and nobody else was, you know. And if he had taken every shot, I would have applauded the situation for him, because, you know, I mean, it was, he tried in the second half, He had, I think he had 10, 11 assists in the second half. You know, they didn't help him that day. And he fell on the sword for the team, but he was incredible. Everybody else was the ones lagging behind.
Yeah, they have major depth issues right now with the Mavs, and this can happen on any given night. Yeah. Who scores? You know, we were blown away midweek last week. I forget who they played, and they got the victory. Charlotte. But it's like, hey, this is awesome that they had guys like this step up and give them production. But that's not something you can expect. And, you know, I think over the weekend in these three games, it's disappointing. But I'm not really adjusting my win total or my thoughts of what this team is, considering how many players are out and this schedule. Rick Carlisle called it a murderous schedule this week.
Yeah.
And, you know, We dealt with it like during football season quite a bit, and I guess it's now rearing its head in basketball. But there are things that can happen to your team that give them valid reasons for not winning or not playing great. And having half your rotation out for a week and a half and then having to travel a bunch and have games in the middle of the afternoon, then the next night on the road, this is a very, very difficult situation for the team to get through. And I think right now it's just a matter of buying your time, getting everybody back, and then I do totally expect this team's going to be on a big winning kick here pretty soon, don't you guys?
Well, I was hopeful that playoff Paul George and what was going on with the Clippers was going to tear that thing apart and that it was going to get ugly. But they're 10-4. They're cruising. They've won four in a row. The one thing I think I've definitely adjusted with the Mavericks is it's Lakers, Clippers, everybody else in the West. So could the Mavericks end up at the top of that? Sure. Could the Mavericks win or lose a playoff series against, like, there's some teams ahead of them that I don't think are better than the Mavericks. The Spurs, I don't think are better than the Mavericks. The Thunder,
to see that Friday.
The Thunder, I don't think are better than the Mavericks.
No.
The Grizzlies, I don't think are better than the Mavericks. Now, the Nuggets are even
John
with
Moran's
you,
back.
And they might be better. So, like, to me, the Mavericks, maybe they end up at the front of the pack, but the Mavericks are just one of the teams with Jazz, Suns, Trailblazers, Warriors, Mavs, Nuggets. Like,
yeah.
Maybe you're the fifth best team in the West. Maybe you're the third best. Maybe you're the sixth best. But my expectations are definitely cooler than they were when it was like, man, maybe this team could make the two seed. Maybe you can, eh. I think what's likely now is that this team gets everybody back together. You get through the COVID stuff. And you get a rhythm, you find the rotation you like, and this team ends up ideally the third or fourth seed in the West, and you see what happens. But I don't have dreams of beating the Lakers or the Clippers after watching the last week. And
yeah,
it changes.
I think that's fair because you said they can be a top four seed. You know,
could
and
be.
I think the thirds. What are they? Just a game and a half or two games removed from that spot. There's nobody really running away with the West. So, you know, home court advantage in the first round, getting to the second round or maybe the conference finals is still very much in play. I don't know, the Clippers lost to the Nuggets last year. I don't know how good Paul George is. You know, is Kawhi Leonard super focused to prove something in the regular season? I don't know. So maybe the two seed is there for the taking. But under these circumstances, you know, I think it's an excused three-game losing streak, Brian.
Yeah, you know, I feel bad for the coaching staff in a way that they're having because of the COVID. And trust me, everybody's going to have to go through this COVID thing. And for the Mavs, earlier than better. That's fine. You know, if they can get it all past them and then hopefully push on. But they don't – Rick talks about the schedule. And you know with coaches, they're using so many young players. You know, Wandu, Green, those guys. They have no practice time. So these guys are going out there and playing, and they're making mistakes, but for time for corrections and stuff, no. It's on to the next city. It's on to the next game. So you really can't – I mean, these guys, they had no training camp really, and no extensive work or anything like that for them to kind of work some things through. But, man, they got a lot of young guys that are playing that are making mistakes that they can't sit down and correct, and they just have to get on to the next game. And I'm trying not to make that an excuse, but I know that those guys would like to be able to kind of have a little bit of practice time to be able to correct their guys of the mistakes they are making.
All right, good stuff, gentlemen. I do want to mention, since we're going around the NBA, you have your picture of James Harden up there as your background. Brian, it's a really neat picture because as the ball comes around, have you seen the camera? As the ball comes around its hand, like your mic is turning into a basketball right there. You see that?
Looks like
you're
talking to the
basketball.
Like
it's cool.
Yeah, there you go.
You can check it out on Twitch TV, Dallas Fan Cam. But, yeah, KD and Harden are gelling at a very impressive pace.
Monday,
they became the first duo to score 30-plus in each of their first two games with a franchise as the Nets beat the Bucks 125-123. And they're looking good, saying all the right things. Yeah, trading Kyrie might be the answer. I think they got to see if they can make it work.
I bet he can make it work. That individual talent can beat the Lakers, but I think when you add Kyrie, something in there is going to break.
Well, Harden's talking about maturity, though.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
He's talking about it. He's talking about it that maybe that maturity could help this team, and so that's why that's what he pointed to is the reason why they're having success right now.
Yeah, at least with him and Durant, they're just laser focused. They know the league. They know what they want. They're not kids feeling their way out in the league. And how's Kyrie assimilate into that? We'll see. It can be tough with three stars. In Miami, Chris Bosh had to really sacrifice. In Cleveland, Kevin Love became an absentee player that frustrated the fans. With the Showtime Lakers, James Worthy could be an MVP. He was like, sure, I'll be the third wheel. I'll do 18 points per game, I guess. You know, it's cool. I'll play great defense, I guess, even though I was better than you for most of our time in college. Michael Jordan, yes. He was amongst the best players in the entire world and sacrificed because, you know, they wanted to be champions. And we'll see. Does Kyrie, does Harden, does Durant want to sacrifice? Can they make it work on the court? But the potential is there, and now it's working really well, and a buzz is building out there in Brooklyn. These folks are coming in on the text saying you need to get Cody on the Fire Stick, the Amazon Fire Stick, and then KODI. That goes to installing a third-party app, and it's kind of pirating, and that just hasn't clicked on with the consumer base. Maybe it does when the millennials or the zennials are like the tone setters of the entire consumer culture. But for Gen X and up, that ain't going to cut it. You know, I think that's a little bit too complicated, and we feel like an ethical sort of barrier between us and just taking that free content doesn't work. When we come back, it's time for Jeff's unnamed segment of the day. Sir, where are we headed with that?
How many teams should not call Houston about Deshaun Watson, and why are the Cowboys being thrown in is next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.